You blew me off for a bottle of tequila. Tequila's just no good for you. Is it called? Is it right? It's not nearly as much fun to wake up to.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Scalpels and Tequila, a Grey's Anatomy recap podcast. I'm Ayla.
And I'm Tamsin. And I can't believe we're actually at the end of season three.
This ending, this is one of the longest Grey's Anatomy seasons. It is 25 episodes. And I swear, watching this episode, there's so much packed into it that I paused it a couple of times just to make sure that it wasn't an hour and a half episode.
There's so much packed into it, but it's like still at the end of it, all I can think about is that wedding dress.
Mama took my brows. I was waiting for it. There's so much of this episode that I don't remember being this episode. Like I remember Adele's miscarriage.
Same.
I remember Ava begging Alex. I remember no one getting Chief. I remember the hikers, which honestly, I don't even want to talk about them. There's so much more to talk about. But I don't remember it all being this episode.
All together. I know. But also, it does make sense. It feels like such a finale episode.
This year took three seasons. So the timeline that I've decided to give it is 1 month, 3 months per season.
Mm. But that's only 9 months. That's not 12 months.
Can we all just pretend that my maths is better and it's not late at night? And I said 4 months per season.
Oh, that's totally what you said. Yeah. You're so good. So good.
Oh, wait, I have an apology to make in advance.
Oh, yeah, go.
I'm actually sitting in a motel room in Bendigo, which is in rural Australia, and there's a very loud clabbering of tradies in the room next to me. So if you hear any hooting or hollering or Crocodile Dundee out the window, that's what's going on.
It's just the tradies. Just the tradies next door.
Uh-huh. You've got to put your deepest voice on.
Oh, my God, can I? Oh, I'm not good at
it. I want to hear it now.
All right, I'll try. No, I can't. Lord. Being chief is about responsibility. Every single surgical patient in hospitals is your patient. Whether you're the one who cut them open or not, the scalpel stops with you. You need to be able to look at her family and tell them your team did everything they could to save someone's child, their husband, their wife. You get caught up taking care of other people's families and responsibility. You take care of other people's families and you sacrifice your own.
So this not a monologue was done by the chief. And throughout this episode, we see the chief telling all of our four contenders why they aren't the next chief. But who the fuck is he saying this monologue to?
I think he's saying it to all of them.
You think he's brought everyone into the room and said this?
Like, I know he's not actually, but I think, no. I think because it cuts between him talking to Mark, Burke, Derek, and Addie. So I think it's supposed to kind of be as if he's told them all a similar thing.
Well, that makes sense. So Mark's the first one he dismisses. So he's come in fourth and he says, you only got in the race out of some unfinished business with Derek. Addison's the next one to come in, and he tells her she doesn't have it, and she begs him and says, I need a reason to stay here. That's why I deserve this job. And Weber responds with, if you need a job to give you a life, you either need a new job or a new life.
Which I know sounds really brutal, but I actually think.
Yeah.
I agree.
Preston comes in and he says, I held you to a higher standard. The tremor, Christina, everything that happened this year, the hardest call can be admitting when you're in over your head. I want to give you the job, but I can't because you don't know your own boundaries.
Which is also fair.
Mm-hmm. But then Derek comes in. He tries to give Derek the job, And Derek just kind of smirks at him and says, I'm not the best man for the job. You're the best man for the job. And you get a chance to do it all over again. And you can do it differently.
The best man learns from his mistakes. Be the best man. And I don't think that wording was unintentional.
The best man.
Derek has just been the best man at Burke's wedding. Derek is learning from Burke's quote-unquote mistakes in trying to love Christina when she didn't want to be loved like that, trying to change Christina into a person that Christina isn't.
Derek's doing the exact same thing. The scene when he corners her in the locker room after she's come up to him and apologized and said, hey, I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. I know I was absent for the last couple of days, but I'm back. I'm here. Let's have a chat. And he just blows her off. And then in the locker room, gets all stroppy about her being the one that leaves him. It was a very good speech. But at the end of the day, he's throwing a tantrum because she had a bad day because her mother died. Her father harassed her. She had to do her intern's exam. And instead of being like, okay, she's had a day, she needs some time, he's taken it personally.
Yeah. And he keeps repeating the same phrase, like, you keep leaving me. Okay, let's rewind this, Derek, because I think what happened was you guys were happy, your wife came back, and then you left Meredith. And she got so gaslit to the point where you're with your wife and you kept saying, I want to be with you instead. I want to be with you instead, but also pushing her away. So what a confusing, horrible time for her. Then you break it off with Addison and you start gaslighting Meredith. You make her feel so shit about herself. And then her mother dies. And then she almost drowns and you make it all about you. Make it all about you and this idea that like she doesn't love you enough to stay in this world, which she also kind of wasn't doing, but she was testing her own boundaries, but with herself. It had nothing fucking to do with you. And then she starts building a relationship with a stepmom and then her fucking stepmom dies. Her dad slaps her in her workplace.
Blames her for that mother's death.
Then harasses her in her workplace. And you have the gall. Oh, sorry, Derek. And then you say, oh, look, I think I'm going to choose either between you or being the chief. And I don't think I want to be with you enough because you're too much work. It's going to make being the chief hard. And that's bad for me. And now you're coming to her saying, you don't want to be with me because you keep leaving me.
I flirted with a girl at the bar last night and it was the highlight of my week. You should be concerned. Excuse me?
Yeah. It's so awful. Like when you think about it like this, in all, like what does he mean you keep leaving me? What the fuck is he talking about?
And he puts it all back on her.
She should be saying that to him.
He says, Meredith, I do love you. Don't you see? Don't you understand? You're the love of my life. I can't leave you, but you're constantly leaving me. You walk away when you want to. You don't walk away on everyone else, not your friends, but you leave me. So I'm asking you, if you don't see a future with us, if you're not in this, then end it because I'm in it. Put me out of my misery. You whiny little bitchy bastard. Have some consideration for what the fuck this woman's gone through. In the last year, because on top of everything you've mentioned that's happened in the last, what, 4 months? That's happened this season. There was a bomb. Her best friend's father died. She's shit after shit after shit.
And also, like, just because Burke and Christina are getting married, and obviously that's what he's looking at. He's looking at those two and he's being like, oh, I can't believe we're not getting married or whatever. It's like, why don't you guys just date for a bit? Why do you need her? Like, what commitment is he asking her? What is he asking her to do? Because as it stands, from what I'm watching, he hasn't sat down and said, hey, in order for me to feel like you're committed to me, this is what I need. Like he hasn't asked her, like, what are they doing? What does he need from, what can she do to prove that she's in this? Because I don't think he's even giving her an option.
Not from what I can see. I was infuriated by it.
It's just, he's come up with this thing in his head and he's like, I think we're over because of it.
Because she spent a day being quiet and he's been with her long enough to know that when really bad stuff happens, she kind of goes insular. It's not like she gathered all of her friends around and had a big cry about her mum dying, or that she, you know, got consoled by Addison and the chief and Bailey when the intern exam. She sat in a chair in silence for what appeared to be hours. You're not missing out, Derek. She didn't not talk to you.
Where
she
was didn't Derek then,
talk
actually?
To anyone because she couldn't make words happen. But also, yeah, where was Derek?
But he didn't also, he didn't come and find her in that moment. Yeah, he came to her house, you know, after and peeked through the window. And actually, I think he did the right thing by walking away that night. But like, I don't know, he could try harder. Meet her halfway.
It's something that we've said time and time again. You don't, it's not healthy to gain all of your comfort from one person.
Exactly.
These people that she was seeking solace with at the end of the day also had a similarly stressful day to her. And like, what's wrong with a text message or a phone call? Like, hey, I heard some stuff happen today. I just wanted to check in and see if you're all right. Do you need me? It's about what he needs. It's always about what he needs.
Totally. And I don't know. I even thought it was really massive that Meredith, when Derek wanted to come and talk to Meredith when they were leaving for Christina's wedding and Meredith is holding the wedding dress, the fact that she was like, I'll meet you there. Izzy, can you take the wedding dress? I'm going to talk to Derek. Like, I even thought like she was being a bad friend to Christina and putting Derek in front of Christina in that moment when it's Christina's fucking day. I was like, oh, that surely that is a huge thing to witness, to be as a partner and be like, oh, wow, she's really like putting me first right now.
I'm just so shitty about the whole thing. And Meredith says, I really need to make sure she gets down that aisle, because Meredith's head has it.
Yeah.
That, what does she say?
Well, she says, we need you to have a happy ending. Like, we need this.
I need you to go down the aisle.
That aisle.
You marrying Burke is a sign that people like you and me can do this. Be healthy, happy. You marrying Burke restores my faith in me.
Look, it's a little bit annoying that Meredith's making this whole day about her, honestly. But I do enjoy how connected they are. And I've always enjoyed their friendship like that. I think it's really sweet and really beautiful. But there's so many moments where it's like, oh my God, Meredith, it's Christina's dad. Like, listen to Christina, shut up about Derek for one day.
And Christina calls her out for it later.
Necessary.
I think the one thing that we don't need to talk about today is the hikers.
You don't want to talk about them at all?
I've got notes of stuff that was said during their surgeries, and that was kind of the most important. But like, there's a moment between George and Derek when they're in there and they're having a bit of a debate about whether or not you go up the mountain or down the mountain.
Yeah. Let's talk about it though. Yeah. So the fourth hiker has arrived. We saw that last episode. He comes in late and he does have this axe in his head. And we know that the hikers were overheard talking about how they left their buddy up there. They left their friend up there. They take the fourth hiker into surgery. And we've heard this story from the other three that as they were climbing up the mountain, they were all connected. He turned around to start climbing back down. And as the rest of them were going up, there was a little bit of an argument. And as one guy swung his ice pick back to then put it into the mountain, it got stuck in his friend's head on the backswing.
Because they were falling, so he used his axe to secure themselves and it got lodged. The bit that gets me is when Derek's removing the ice pick, he says to George, there might be a lot of tearing in here. And he struggles to pull the ice pick out. And when he does, it's a clean cut. And for some reason, that leads Derek to believe that it wasn't an accident.
That makes sense to me. That doesn't make sense to you?
No.
So he's saying the story goes that it happened as they were falling. If this guy was falling and the ice pick hit his head, there would have been more of a scraping, pulling motion as the head went down, the ice pick went up.
Oh.
But instead,
he said that it should be quite shallow.
Shallow because the axe is falling. It's not in straight. It's not like a straight axe straight into something directly. It's like a missed swing, like a scrape on the way down. It should be kind of coming back out. Like it's like a knife going through instead of like something going in straight. I'm doing actions and it's a podcast, but I'm doing actions for Ayla. Whereas when he pulls it out, it looks more like it's gone in directly.
Deliberately.
Yeah.
Yeah. But Derek goes back to the guys and says, what's going on? Lani's stable. And they all start freaking out.
Derek knows from the way that this has gone in, Derek's gone, this is intentional. These guys tried to hurt their buddy. What the fuck? But the conversation that they're having
during the surgery
is really important. And I do think we need to talk about that because it's Derek and George. And, you know, they're having one of those classic Grace chats where they're talking about the patient, but they're talking about their lives.
And the whole idea is that you're in a dangerous situation. It's getting worse. Do you continue to push through and get to the top?
Or do you
go back the other way?
Turn around.
Mm-hmm. And George is of the side of if something's scary, you should be able to go back.
George says you should be allowed to change your mind.
And Derek says if everyone's going up, then you need to follow and go up.
He says you choose to climb a mountain. You can't turn back. You can't turn back mid-climb. You can't change your mind.
They all have really terrible thoughts about their partners, don't they?
Yeah, don't they? Don't they? Absolutely.
Derek refers to being with Meredith as a hard push up a mountain through a storm, and George wants to tuck tail and run away.
Mm. Yeah.
Ridiculous. Alex is also tucking tail and running away this episode.
So Rebecca's partner has come out of the woodwork.
Jeff.
He's come into the hospital.
Oh, woodwork. Good one.
Why?
He's a woodworker.
Is he actually?
Yeah, that's what she said last episode.
Oh, my God. I did not even mean to do a pun.
You did a pun.
Thank you. I did a pun.
Funny. Her name is Rebecca Pope, not Ava. And Alex is describing their meeting to Izzy during one of the surgeries because everyone's in all the surgeries today. Because the start of our episode, all of the girls were at Christina's hen's night, a little bit drunk, and for some reason all got paged in and came in even though they were drunk. Everyone gets assigned surgeries, and Bailey tells Christina off that it's her wedding day. I've given you the day off. Go the hell home. So all of our interns are sort of doing bits and pieces of everything. But Izzy and Alex are in a surgery. Addison's there. And she asks Alex how Ava's doing with the husband coming back. And he says that she looked bored. He was crying his eyes out and she looked bored like she didn't want to be there and that she doesn't really know what she wants to do. And Izzy, up on her high adulterous horse, says, it's not complicated. She took a vow. They're married. She has to go with him.
I don't think that's on her high horse. I think that's her
frustrated that George is going to do the right thing.
That's her frustrated. Yeah. She's like, that's how it goes. Like that's what it means. And Izzy is a believer in marriage. She loves weddings. This is her whole thing, her whole confusing dichotomy of feeling like she has ruined this marriage, but she doesn't feel like they should be in a marriage anyway, but it's these vows and she believes in the vows. So she's having a time.
It's having an absolute time.
Not having a good day. Also, you know, I think we all know she doesn't really love George like that. She loves George for some other reasons that she hasn't figured out yet.
Well, Alex pops in and sees Jeff, Daddy, holding the baby. And he remarks that the baby looks just like Rebecca used to look. Alex says, how could you not look for her?
Alex really oversteps in this moment.
Mm-hmm.
Alex just lets the personal go way too far.
I think Jeff said something really important. He says that they got into a fight the night before and that Ava tried to tell him how unhappy she was. And I didn't look for her, but I also didn't see her when she was standing there in front of me.
And he said that was worse. I think that's an important distinction. He was like, yes, I didn't look for her, but what's worse is that, what was it? I didn't notice her when she was there.
And then he just flips and says, oh, how did she look when her face was all mangled? And Alex out of nowhere just says she was beautiful.
Mm. One of those rare moments where you see the good in Alex. He lets you see it.
But the next time we see Alex and Ava together, he's in his suit, ready for the wedding. and starts off with pleasantries, and she's happy that he passed his exam, but she got discharged. And he can't really believe this. She got discharged by OB, neuro, plastics, everyone, even her teeth got.
Did you like that they mentioned the teeth? I wrote that down. I was like, Ayla, it's being discussed. It's come up. There's a reason.
Yeah.
Why? I thought you'd be happy. You'd be finally they're discussing the fact that her teeth look crazy.
Because I know, but we didn't get to see what happened with her teeth because I didn't know that there were teeth surgeons.
Oh, yeah, because it wasn't orthodontics. It was something else, wasn't it?
She said the name of them and I couldn't catch it, write it down, and she couldn't say it, so I'm not going to be able to say it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But we get a monologue from Ava.
It's a good one.
Did you write this one down?
I didn't. Did you?
I did. I have every reason to go. And this is moving at warp speed, but this is good. He is the father of my child. I have every reason to go because medically there is no good reason for me to stay. Medically. And Alex is looking at her all confused and saying, you should go. And she stands at the door and says, did you sniff glue as a child? I'm asking you something. And he says, what do you want from me? I want you to give me a reason to stay. Jeff is a good guy. To him, I'm Rebecca, but I don't know if I'm Rebecca anymore. But you know me. You name me Ava, and I'm more me as Ava than I will ever be as Rebecca. And Alex ponders this for a moment, and he just does, Justin Chamberlain just does such an incredible job showing a person tearing apart between what they want and what they're responsible for. Because she's asking him for a huge thing. She has nowhere to go. It's not like she has a house to go to.
This isn't someone Alex can just have a little fling with. This isn't just like, we can just sleep together a few times. Maybe we'll see each other. We'll get a drink. It's like, no. This is a baby duckling has imprinted on you. And you have to take care of that baby duckling forever.
Mm-hmm. And that baby duckling has a baby.
And he's not ready. We know he's not ready.
No, and she's been discharged. She'd literally have to move into Meredith's house. And he says, I think you should stick with the decent guy.
Yeah. And like, agreed. And Ava, you can see Ava just absolutely breaking, and she needs to make a decision for her kid in this moment. And it's like, yeah, of course the right decision is to go with the father of the baby who's decided that he does want to be here. But it's like at the same time.
With boring old Jeff.
You know, she was leaving him to go and follow her heart and to follow her bliss and to find out what she loves and what she likes in her life. But she can't do that now, you know? Like that's why she was leaving him to go and explore life. And she can't.
She's also just going to be riddled with medical bills.
True.
She was at the hospital for months and has many, many extensive surgeries. She would have been better off staying around as Ava because they could never bill her.
Oh, my God, that's so true. Now that they have her name.
Now they have her name.
Her health records, her MyGov account. I know it's not American.
So much responsibility. And Callie and George are just desperate for the responsibility, apparently.
It's so, this whole episode is so full of bad timing.
Life-changing choices, bad timing, and being responsible for people. Like the chief said, like bad timing of Bailey walking up to the notice board right when Callie's standing there and Callie just saying it hasn't been posted yet. Chief resident hasn't been posted. And George walks past and Callie drags him into a room and starts rambling, and it's so excitable and so adorable.
Because ever since she let it out, you know when you're thinking about something and you think you want that thing, but you push it down, but then as soon as you say it out loud, it becomes real?
Mm-hmm.
She let it come out that she's wanted a baby to Addison. And since then, as she said, she's been kept up at night. She's been thinking nonstop. It's become real. She really wants a baby.
It's just the way she puts it. She's like, what I'm about to say is crazy. Yeah. It's not responsible. I love my life and it's probably all just hormones and I can't think of anything worse than housing a baby for nine months.
I know, housing a baby.
It's horrible, but it's happening and all I want to do is house a baby for 9 months.
Responsibility. She wants the responsibility of another person. I think she's always wanted the responsibility of someone. She wanted the responsibility of having George, but George doesn't kind of let her. He doesn't really let her love him like that.
Is this a baby band-aid?
I believe her when she says she wants a baby, and I think she wants a baby for her, and I think she wants mm-hmm. a baby to have something in her life that she feels so connected to and responsible for that she can love and nurture. But in this relationship, yeah, I think it's definitely a baby band-aid because she wants to share something with George. She wants the relationship that Izzy has with George. She wants a thing for them. That's why they got married. It still didn't work.
Yeah, that's just theirs. When she pulls him into that room and she starts talking about being crazy and irrational, I absolutely thought that she was going to ask George what was actually going on with mm-hmm. Izzy. Because remember last episode, we saw her standing on a staircase looking quite suspicious, watching over them have a conversation. And then the episode ended with Izzy talking about what love and commitment means and Callie giving side eye.
Yeah.
And so I thought he was going to drag her in there and be like, you need to tell me what's going on right now.
Yeah.
And it was opposite. And then they get to making a baby.
And Callie just has so much joy. She gets this good news that she's going to be chief resident. She gets, you know, last week was the first week in a while where I feel like Callie has felt valued.
Mm-hmm.
And she felt so valued at work. It's like she was seen by her job. People were fighting over her about how good she is at her job and needing her in their surgeries and needing her. And that's a huge confidence boost, especially when she's been fighting for her husband to need her, to want her, to value her for so long. And then she got it at work. So, you know, she's getting that's a great feeling.
Validation.
Even though, yeah, she watched these things with George and they were hard and they were confusing, and they were weird, but she was getting joy from somewhere at work, and it kind of trumped that, and it let her see what other joy she wants in her life, and that's a baby for her.
And she finally almost mm-hmm. has friends.
Yeah.
Being Christina and Meredith.
And Addison. We had another friendship moment with her and Addison last week. And there's some joy. And it's nice.
And we're sitting there and we're so happy for Callie. And then Izzy does this fucking hatefully awful thing right before our episode ends. She goes into the locker room and finds George getting ready, checks the room to make sure no one's there. Starts doing George's tie and says, I need to say something to you. George sets his boundary and says, everything that needs to be said has already been said. And she again says, if you want to be with Callie, I'll support you because I'm your best friend and I love you and I will support you because I'm your best friend, but I'm in love with you.
It's so shit because it's like, that's not how you follow up that sentence. Like, that's not how you say, like, I'm your best friend and I love you, but I'm also in love with you, so I'm going to fuck your life up at the same time.
I'm going to completely ruin your life. I'm going to be the least supportive person of all time. It's the worst. It's the absolute worst.
I understand, like, where that came from with Izzy because she just walked out of the OR and she just listened to Burke practicing his wedding vows, which are so beautiful.
Oh, yeah, that's right, because a pregnant girl is brought in. So this is all still the same day before. Everyone must be heckin' tired for this wedding
mm-hmm.
because we left the episode at the Bucks night at Joe's and our surrogate mother collapsed. She was brought in and she's given to Burke immediately. And we find out that she'd been having chest pains since 3 a.m. and she's sent straight for surgery, which means they've got to take the babies out. But it means she's probably got something, one of her aortas. Or arteries has burst. So they need to do an aortic dissection. And Joe says the most wonderful thing when she finds out these babies are coming out because the mother's freaking out going, I haven't chosen. We can't have these babies yet. And Joe grabs her hand and says, you don't need to choose right now. Right now, the most important thing is making sure that you're okay.
Which is just so, oh, it's so beautiful. There's so many moments in this episode where I just want to cry.
I know. That's why I took so many notes and wrote down so many great lines. But they take her into surgery and Addison's there removing the babies, which is where Alex, Izzy, and mm-hmm. Addison talk about Ava. And afterwards, they're in the room and Burke's fixing up her heart. And they're talking about the wedding. And he says he's quite nervous because he doesn't know if his vows are any good. And Addison says, well, you got a room full of women who can't go anywhere. Why don't you test them out on us?
Yeah. And this is one of the ones that I wrote down word for word because I was like, these are just so perfect.
Okay. Because I wrote it down, but it wasn't a very good writing of it down. So please.
Christina, I could promise to hold you and cherish you. I could promise to be there in sickness and in health. I could say till death do us part, but I won't. Those vows are for optimistic couples, the ones full of hope. And I do not stand here on my wedding day optimistic or full of hope. And it's cute because at this moment you're like, okay, is he going to leave Christina? Because yeah, he's been saying that, like, you know, it felt like the start of a Christina Burke fight.
It's just a bit shit.
And then he continues, I'm not optimistic. I am not. I am sure. I am steady. And I know I am a heart man. I take them apart. I put them back together. I hold them in my hands. I am a heart man. So this I am sure. You are my partner, my lover, my very best friend. My heart beats for you. And on this day, the day of our wedding, I promise you this. I promise you to lay my heart in the palm of your hands. I promise you me.
Too trite? Because I can rewrite it.
And then Addison says, I think I speak for every woman here when I say, dump her.
Dump her.
Dump Yang and marry me.
I love that the camera never pans to Boki because, you know, Boki is just
totally
completely
she's just like holding out a 10 blade, like waiting for him to ask for it.
Like, okay, we're done. That was lengthy. Let's go.
It's beautiful.
But that's the conversation that provokes Izzy to ruin George's life.
Because she's like, no, I'm optimistic. I'm the opposite of that. I'm optimistic because she wants to be happy. She wants so badly to be loved. She mm-hmm. wants the fairy tale and she's optimistic that she'll get it. And she's hopeful that George is supposed to be her person. So she's going to fight for him.
How do you get over the man that you loved who died?
Like this, by falling for the one person that was there for you. I mean, they all were there, but George is really the only person that's been super connected with her. And then his mum died and they bonded over losing people and she needed to throw all of her energy, attention, love,
sad
into something. And it was George. And I get it. I get it. You know, it's like that was the connection that she made.
But it's the same sort of thing that Derek's doing to Meredith, where he doesn't seem to consider her or what she's going through at all.
Yeah.
Izzy needs this for herself. But she's not considering the impact this is having on George.
Exactly.
I don't think any of our bridesmaids are considering the impact of them all being at the hospital.
No, not at all.
While Christina is trapped at home with Mama Burke. And oh my God, I do not remember or did not remember how intense and unsettling the scene is with the choker.
Oh, I did. That is, I feel like that's so burnt into my brain.
It's putting a collar on her.
Yeah. It's saying you are a Burke now. That's the whole thing. It's like what generations of Burke women wore this on their wedding day and now they are Burkes. You will wear this.
And it's this really, it's such a mum thing to do. The really nasty.
Mm-hmm.
Backhanded compliments
mm-hmm.
of, I misjudged you early on. I thought you were selfish, but you've been very willing to adapt. You've been very flexible to the things that Burke wants.
It's like, oh, I didn't think we would be able to mold you, but we can. Good girl, good puppy mm-hmm. dog. Good training.
Good girl. What are you planning on doing about your eyebrows?
I know, but she says that as well right at the moment. Like, she's giving Christina all these compliments and Christina's like, fine, I guess I did this for a reason. I'm making this mum happy. Okay. And then she does the like, okay, eyebrows. She's like, nothing. They're my eyebrows, you fucking weirdo. You have eyebrows. Why can't I have eyebrows?
Literally me for the last, I don't know, 20 years, I only started doing anything with my eyebrows about 4 or 5 years ago. And all of my friends for years would either say nothing or say too much. Like, oh, have you thought about doing this? And then I suddenly started trying to do my eyebrows and it was just, oh, so you've tried. And I'm like, you're not being supportive. And like, I appreciate that you've never blatantly told me my eyebrows are terrible, but also now that I'm trying, maybe give a bitch some tips.
I also feel like eyebrows are such a thing. Like, you either just don't notice them at all or you really do. Like, there is eyebrow people and there's just people. Yeah. Like, I just feel like you're either it's like an all or nothing situation with eyebrows.
Since I've started doing my eyebrows.
And now you notice other people's. I bet you didn't used to notice eyebrows before.
Well, no, I've always noticed other people, but now I can't leave the house if I don't have eyebrows on. I think my face looks funny. But the problem is that I started getting my eyebrows done when I had Botox in because I get an eyebrow lift so that they can actually have a proper shape. So my eyebrows are waxed to the shape of my Botoxed forehead. And now that I haven't had Botox for 6 months, my eyebrows are a really fucked up shape that can't be fixed unless I shave them all off.
No, I get them tattooed.
Still better than your soon-to-be mother-in-law waxing them off. The scene of Christina rollers in her hair, which I don't understand the need for because her hair is pulled back, trudging through the hospital, wedding gown in tow.
Iconic.
Like that is peak. My wedding day is going well.
I need to cut something.
Mine was waking up on the couch because Evan had come. I was like, cool, your friend's here from the UK. Please don't stay out later than midnight. I need to get a good night's sleep. You need to get a good night's sleep. And it got to 11 and I tried calling him. He didn't pick up. It got to 1. I tried calling him. He didn't pick up. He got home at 4 and was so drunk that he could barely breathe in his sleep and was snoring. So I had to go and sleep on the couch.
Oh my God, really?
Uh-huh. And then I woke him up at 9 a.m. and he had vomited all over my side of the bed.
This is on your wedding day, wedding, non-wedding
day. Uh-huh. Yep. And then
oh my God. Were you furious?
Yeah, so I went through all that and then we had the ceremony. Yes. I nearly called off the whole day.
Ayla.
Yeah, I went upstairs to where my two friends were staying in the same apartment as the bitch who kept him out all night. And I went up there completely forgetting she was there to smoke a joint. And oh my God, it took every fiber of my being not to rip her throat out. And then to top it off, we got there, we did the thing, we had the great ceremony. And then some bitch kissed me directly on the cheek with bright red lipstick.
You're never going to let me live that down.
No, but I'm going to wear red lipstick to your wedding or non-wedding. It's going to happen. My revenge will be swift. But it's Christina approaching Meredith. And I think that the main theme of this episode might actually be not being able to see past the end of your nose until it's too late.
Yeah.
Because one, Christina's not supposed to be at the hospital. And when she approaches Meredith, Meredith's doing paperwork or whatever. And all you hear is her like almost sobbing, Meredith, I need you.
I know.
And Meredith just starts ranting about Derek's bullshit.
Which can so, it's like, Meredith, that can fucking wait. Like turn around. Like she doesn't even turn around. She
doesn't even turn around. Like
just she's like, oh, Christina, good. I can rant about Derek to someone. Oh my God. He just told me that he met this girl. Like, yeah, it's shitty, but like, it's not the fucking day. Your friend whose wedding it is behind you. Are you not shocked? Like, do you not want to know? Like, oh, shit, why are you here?
Why are you there? Nah. Mm-hmm. Can you not hear the ruffling of the organza? It's just
like, right, an excuse to rant.
Meredith, sometimes it's about you and sometimes it's about me. Mama Burke took my eyebrows and now and just you don't I've never really noticed how much forehead Sandra Oh has.
Everyone has a big forehead if they don't have eyebrows.
Right until this moment. Oh, the makeup department just did her so they did dirty. Her
this is so good. It's so funny. It's so good. It's also because her hair is pulled back so tight in those rollers. So it's like,
so tight.
It's so well done. It was like, what is the best thing, dear makeup department, that you can do to accentuate the fact she has no eyebrows? And they're like, oh, we got this.
We got this. I think I'm laughing more than Peter's fish. But, oh, my God, that'd be the worst day. But Meredith just sheepishly approaching Bailey, who, again, Meredith, see past the end of your nose. Bailey has just seen Callie Torres on the notice board as chief resident. And if Bailey gets told that she didn't get the position because she's a mum, oh, I'm going to be mad. I'm going to be writing an angry letter. But she turns to Bailey and says, Christina needs to cut something. They took her eyebrows.
It's so good.
Do you have the speech?
Yes, I do. Okay. She says, you have to let me cut because I'm standing here eyebrowless with no dignity left. I am a surgeon, but right now I don't feel like one. I feel like somebody else. Do you know what that's like? To feel like somebody else? And she does.
She does.
She does know. But she also tells Christina to go home. Well, she told Christina to go home, then Christina did a speech, and then Bailey lets her cut. And it's funny because she like...
And I hate that we were laughing through the speech because it was so genuine.
This is...
The struggle.
This. I mean, Sandra Oh is so... incredible. And this episode is hers. Like, this just goes to her. This she deserves an award for this. It's so good. She goes through a roller coaster of emotions in this episode.
Yeah.
And she really doesn't know who she is. This is so confusing. She's never wanted any of this, but she will do it because she loves Burke.
And I think Bailey realizes that the one gift that she can give Christina, the one bit of calm, Bailey's given her the day off. And she said it earlier, be grateful I've given you the day off. But Christina didn't need the day off. She needed to be calm and resolute and in her happy place. And Bailey's finally able to give her that. And it's adorable because Christina's in a trance. And they're in an OR and Bailey lets her make the opening cut and she's standing there holding this knife, desperate to feel like herself again. Christina, put down the scalpel. You need to go.
They basically just let her do one cut and then kick her out.
Just one cut. Yeah. And as they're kicking her out, some random cardio surgeon gets dragged into Burke's OR as Derek takes off his headlamp and drags him out because he's got a wedding to get to as well. And no one is in pastels at the wedding.
No, thank God. I actually really like the brown.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think all of our bridesmaids.
I think wardrobe did really well. I think like they were trying to make them look a bit silly in the pastel one. And the brown, I can't even talk about it. It's so bad.
That one they put Callie in, man, was not okay. It's so bad. I was telling someone about it the other day and I was like, yep, I could have definitely seen that at a year 7 graduation in 2002.
But I think they all look really good in brown.
Yeah. And in the locker room, Izzy's putting on Christina's makeup. I don't know who did that hair because that was more than 30 minutes worth of hair. It looked amazing.
It's incredible. Those little diamantes in it, I love.
Stunning. And we get to the church and Mama Burke wasn't fucking around. This is a huge church.
Oh, yeah. This is all the bells and whistles. This is flower arrangements and full full rows of people. And
Addison doesn't know where to sit. Where do you sit when you know the bride and groom? I didn't know that was a thing at weddings.
How do you not know that's a thing? That's a thing. Bride on the left, groom on the right. Bride on the, that's where, that's a wedding thing.
I just haven't been to that many weddings. Well, Alex doesn't give a shit. He just sits next to the hottest bitch in the place.
I love that he says that to her. What a fucking compliment. I don't know what it is. It comes across as like, it just comes across as like a really great thing to say. I don't know why it doesn't come across as too sleazy or anything. It works.
They use each other as an emotional sexual crutch.
Crotch?
Crotch.
Yeah, yeah, they do. An emotional sexual crotch.
And she shuts him down. You don't want me. You want Ava.
They have such a good relationship.
Yeah. And she's like, you suck. To me, you suck. I kind of hate you. But you do not get unlimited chances to get everything you want. To you, she will always be Ava. Then Alex runs away, but we get to see Christina in a gown that is, it's just not dated. It's a truly beautiful wedding dress.
It's stunning. The costuming today in this episode is really stunning. Everyone looks so good.
And I just realized in this moment that they actually matched the bridesmaids' dresses to the choker.
Oh.
The choker's got all the dangly bits at the bottom are all brown. But Christina's mum, it's awful because she says to Christina, I'm proud of you.
Mm.
And Christina's so happy to hear that. And you see this little switch go off in her head like, oh, I'm a surgeon. I was the top of my class. I've excelled in all of these incredible things. But now you're proud of me? And mum says, I always feared you were too emotionally stunted to settle down. I'm sorry, mummy dearest. Whose fault mm-hmm. would that be?
And also, what about like all the incredible things she does in her career? Like your daughter's about to be a heart surgeon.
That's what I mean. My daughter was in the top of her class. She's literally done everything a tiger mum could dream of. I'm surprised that Christina didn't bite her face off.
I want to leave the wedding there for a minute because I really want to talk about Richard so we can end on the wedding.
Oh, yep. Completely forgot. Pardon me. So we're going on the trail of broken marriages.
Yeah. So Adele, you know, was very dramatically bleeding out on the bathroom floor with Richard at the end of last episode. And she's in the hospital now and Richard has not left her side. And Adele has been looked over by Addison. And as Adele is not awake at the moment, Addison really does try not to tell Richard anything, but it does get to this weird point where, you know, Richard plays the this is my wife card, and if anything happens, like I need to know what's going on.
Well, because he automatically thinks that it might be uterine cancer because it runs in her family.
Yep.
So he does know her quite well, and I think that's what they're setting up. He says he has a right to know that his wife was in the hospital. Didn't like that.
No, I mean, it's one of those tricky things where it's like legally, maybe, but no, like you guys are separated. You're separated for a really good reason.
I mean, separated for a while.
Yeah. But Addison does tell him that no, it's not cancer. This is most likely a miscarriage. She's having a miscarriage.
Mm-hmm.
And Chief doesn't, he doesn't get mad. He doesn't get
jealous.
Jealous. He just wants her to be okay. And he stays in the room and he stays by her side. And when she wakes up, he's there.
They check on the baby. There is a heartbeat, but it's slow. And he asks her, not in an aggressive, accusatory way, why didn't you tell me?
Yeah.
And, like, I see Adele's side of it. She's like, what would you have done? Congratulate me? And just tells him to go back to work because it's what he's always done. And the next time we see them, she's telling him to go. You've got other things to do. You've got people to boss around. It's this very cute moment where he says, take your pills, drink your water. See, I can do all of my bossing right from this chair.
It's one of those moments where you see him being the husband that she's always wanted way too late. Mm-hmm. And he is seeing that too, which is important.
Correct.
He knows. He's chosen this hospital over her, their whole marriage. She's wanted a baby this whole time, but he's always been too busy. The hospital comes first. So she sacrificed so fucking much to be with him, to what? Sew his buttons on?
Pack his lunches? And I don't understand why, for the context of drama, yes, Bailey assigning Meredith to Adele makes sense. But the only time we really see Meredith look after Adele is when she brings in a wheelchair and says, Mrs. Weber, your room's ready. And this gives Weber the opportunity to leave. And his assistant says, oh, you need to deal with the new chief thing. So Adele and Meredith share this moment.
Yeah.
And Adele says, we've met before. You were little. My husband always flirted with your mother. And I didn't want to see that. So I watched you grow up. I'm sorry about your mother. And Meredith just says, I'm sorry about my mother too.
Yeah. And they're both saying sorry about different things.
Yeah, right.
But what I loved in this moment was Adele confiding in Meredith and finding this common ground with her that, you know what, we are both, what we have become is the fault of this hospital. Like, we are both the neglect that this hospital remains.
Remainder?
I don't know. It's like this hospital took away their most important person in their life. And Adele and Meredith both have that in common. Adele's husband left her, like, you know, emotionally left her. Meredith's mum emotionally left her.
Mm-hmm.
The hospital took those people away, and these two have that in common, that they were like,
yeah,
oh, fuck, there's a word and I'm going to remember it tomorrow when I'm like, they share this commonality.
Mutual bond.
Yeah. This thing that only they would understand.
They have common ground with resentment of this hospital, yeah, which I really liked that moment. I thought it was really somber. And then for some reason,
Meredith isn't in the right place for bonding with another mother figure.
No, but they just, what you're saying really makes sense. And it was a really great moment. I would have liked to just seen her wheel away. But then Adele says this thing that really just plays into the Meredith needing to see positive visions of marriage. That's why I don't believe in marriage. I'm a child of four divorces. I don't really understand the need for it or see a purpose in it. Most people I know who are in long-term relationships and then got married at the end often end up being divorced and separated pretty soon after. I think a lot of that's the same for Meredith, where she hasn't really seen marriage be a positive or be able to work out in her life.
Mm.
So they put in this line. That's why it's so important for her to see Christina walk down the aisle. And they have Adele say, we got married at 25 thinking this is happily ever after. Maybe there is no happily ever after.
Yeah.
Just digging that doubt in there for Meredith. But it all goes pretty quickly downhill for Adele after this, once she gets in her room and the chief comes back.
She kind of gets rushed into surgery and things happen. And what we see is the chief kind of stressed and waiting, you know, waiting to hear the news, what's going on with Adele. And it's quite, I don't know, maybe I've watched this episode too many times. Maybe the first time I watched it, this was more shocking. Yeah, probably. It's probably because I knew. I was like, this feels clunky.
Addison's pretty, she's pretty vague about it.
I know. It's like, why are you saying it like this?
Obviously, yeah, why are you being so non-specific? Like,
because Addison does the whole speech that's like, look, we tried everything we could.
Yeah.
But we couldn't save. And he's like, oh my God. And he runs into the room and it's dark. And
she's so grim.
And Adele's fine and she's just lying there in the dark. And he totally thinks she's dead.
Stuck. All Addison had to do was say, Adele's fine. But unfortunately, we did everything we could.
I mean, obviously, they're doing this because they want the audience to think that Adele didn't make it, because they want the audience
Jesus Christ, Addison, read the room.
Feel for Weber, because it needs to feel like we see how he missed his opportunity with her. But, like, I don't know. It's the way it's written. It's so intense.
It's not okay.
And it's so weird. Coming from Addison as well, who doesn't make mistakes like this.
It's so intense. And especially because he.
That's weirder, isn't it? That the room's dark.
No. And he walks into this very, very dark room. The light is only shining on Adele, and her eyes are closed.
Imagine if you just finished surgery, like, oh, you made it through. All right, nighttime, lights off.
And he goes to hold her hand, and then she opens her eyes, and you're like, dear fucking Christ, she's a zombie.
When you're coming out of, like, being under as well, like after surgery, it's so disorienting and weird. If someone just turned the lights off on me, I'd probably think I was dead.
I'd think I was dead. But Weber just says, you know, for a second, I thought I'd lost you. And Adele.
He says, can I call him? Can we talk to the father? Like, we should let him know. And she says, no, like, I never told him. He doesn't know. I misjudged him.
I thought he would go running for the hills. But he's a much better man than I thought. He's the kind of man that'll boss you around and tell you to take your pill and drink your water.
See, I loved this reveal. This is a better reveal than Adele's dead, but she's not actually. Ha ha. She's just in the dark, tricked you, surprise. This is a better reveal.
That's Violet Chachki's tartan onesie reveal. Oh, yeah. That's the level we're at.
And they hold hands and they have a moment, and it's like, yeah, I understand today was really stressful. I understand you guys have bonded, but, like, are you really taking him back though?
And then he just nestles into her ample bosom and they have a cuddle.
It's one day he's treated you well. One day, yeah, out of 20-something, like, years of marriage.
One day.
I'm like, Adele, no. But I understand. Lots of hormones, lots of waking up, lots of scary, big, huge, scary, awful, yuck day. Of course you want that person that knows you the best. Of course, I totally understand. But
I love that the only way this show has written in the script at all and has chosen to tell us that Weber knows anything about Adele is the fact that he knows their family has uterine cancer.
Oh, do we need more than that? That, like, we know they've been married for a long time. But yeah, maybe more things like that would have been cute, like bringing her a favorite food or doing it, or like bringing stuff from home, you know, bringing favorite things without needing to ask. Little things they could have added. You're right. So we kind of drift outside the hospital for a hot second before we head back to the wedding, and Bailey's sitting outside looking pretty sad, and out comes George looking really sad too.
She looks devastated.
And we get this moment where we learn as an audience that George didn't pass his intern exam. And Bailey says, I failed you. And George says, no, I failed you.
Nothing sadder than almost crying Bailey. It's very, very heartbreaking.
Mm-hmm.
And then the scene almost immediately switches to the wedding. And Izzy's peering through the door, talking about how beautiful it looks and saying, where's George? And Callie's just giddy. She's like, oh, he's had a big day. You know, he got his results today, and we decided to have a baby. We even tried today, in fact, as Izzy's heart breaks and Callie's just so happy.
Callie's so joyful. She's so happy. And Christina's ready to go, except all of a sudden she realizes that her vows aren't on her hand because she scrubbed in today. She's like, shit, my vows. And she starts pacing up and down, and this kind of sends her into a bit of a tizzy, and she asks Meredith to talk her down. She says, be me. I need to hear what I would say.
While Burke and Derek are standing up at the altar waiting, the music started playing. And honestly, with Burke's love of classical music, I was expecting them to have a less generic wedding march.
That's so funny.
the music started, the doors aren't opening. And Derek says, look, I'm going to go check what's going on. And Burke says, Christina wouldn't be Christina if she didn't need a little push.
So he's totally understanding in this second.
Mm-hmm. And meanwhile, Christina's having a freak out, which most people do on their wedding days.
Yeah.
And she says to Meredith, say to me what I would say to you if you were me. And Meredith takes a minute and goes, all right, stop whining. This is your wedding day. You will go down that aisle and you will get married. If I have to kick your ass every step of the way, you will get down that aisle and you will get married. We need this. We need your happy ending. And I think I'm just realizing it now that Christina, Burke sees it as her needing him to tell her what to do. But I think she just needs reassurance in general. Christina just needs to be amped up a little bit. She needs to be jazzed. She needs to know she can do it. And she needs to hear it in her own words. Oh,
definitely. Mm-hmm. This is a situation that she is not prepared for. She's so prepared for surgery. That's what she knows. That's what she knows how to do. That's what she's good at. That's what she's sure and certain and, you know, has confidence in. This is a whole new situation for her. She had to get her hair and makeup done today. She got her eyebrows ripped off. She's wearing a tight dress she can't breathe in. She's got a choker on. There's all these situations. She's about to walk out into a room full of people, which is daunting and scary, and she didn't want to do this. So, yeah, give the woman a minute.
Give the woman a fucking minute. And I didn't see anyone, any usher, any person come down to be like, all right, team, are you all ready for us to start playing the music? Yep, cool, okay, cool, and then go back to the band. No one did that check. The music just started playing.
No, where's their 5 minutes? Thank you, five. Where is it?
Where's the five? Thank you, five. But Burke decides that he's going to go down.
Do you know what else you don't see in this whole day either? You don't see Christina ever questioning her relationship with Burke.
Not once.
You see Christina questioning the day. She doesn't believe in the day. She doesn't believe in the fussing. She doesn't like this stuff. But not once do you see her questioning her decision and questioning her relationship. Mm-mm. And that's what's important today. And we don't see that from her. We actually don't see that from her very much.
All we see is commitment. She's committing to the bit.
All we see is commitment. And she's committed to Burke every fucking step of the way of their relationship.
Correct.
It's Burke that's been iffy about it. She's stood up for what she needs and what she wants and what she's like and her
comfort level,
her personality, and she's stuck up for herself
mm-hmm.
in their arguments. But it's never been, you know, I don't want to be with you or like I'm questioning us. It's her being like, I want to be with you, but these are my needs.
Yep. And she's like, you want to be with me? Great. Your need is to get married? Excellent. I will do that.
And Burke questions every single time she says her needs. He takes that as her questioning their relationship. He takes that as her being iffy about loving him, about her being iffy about if she's committed or not. And never once has she been that. It's so weird to get to this point and be like, all Christina has done is shown you commitment. Without losing herself along the way. And I think that's the thing that's so confusing for Christina because all of a sudden she's totally lost herself and she's been fighting to keep herself throughout this whole relationship.
Mm-hmm. She's there. She's ready to go. It's fear at the end of the day. She's worried that she's going to upset Burke because her vows aren't good enough or she doesn't look good enough or she's not being bridey enough. And, you know, Meredith gives her.
Yeah. I feel like that's a really normal thing. I'm sure that's a really normal thing.
And Meredith gives her the kick up the ass she needs, you know, and they're getting ready. They're arranging her dress. They're about to walk down the aisle as Burke opens the door and sees her. And she says, don't worry. I was a little bit scared, but I'm ready to go now. I'm going to do this. And he just throws it back in her face. And she says, I'm sorry. I can do this.
I had a momentary freak out, but I'm fine.
And to be honest, I don't think that this would have been a scary, daunting, I can't do this moment for Christina if they were going to the courthouse and she was wearing a pretty dress to an after party with this 150 people. I don't think it would have been a problem at all.
No. And also a second ago, Burke was like, it's Christina being Christina. She just needs a little push. Everything's fine. But that's the moment that he realizes
that she needs the push.
He doesn't love the Christina that she is. He loves a version of Christina that he wants to turn her into, which we've been saying
since day
for so long.
He says, but you don't want to do this. I was waiting for you to come, but you didn't want to come. But you will because you love me. And if I loved you.
If I loved you.
Rough. If I loved you. You. Not the woman I hope you will be or the woman that you will become. I wouldn't be up there waiting for you. I would let you go. You fucking turd.
She says, I'm wearing the dress. I'm ready. And maybe I didn't want to before, but I want to now. I really think I want this. And he says, I wish that you didn't think. I wish that you knew.
She does want it.
And what he doesn't fucking understand is that
she does want this. She doesn't want the wedding.
She's saying the wedding. Yeah, she's not saying you, Burke. She's saying the wedding. But then again, you have to see it from Burke's perspective because he's finally fucking had this light bulb moment and gone, oh, but I want someone who wants a wedding. Oh, I want someone who wants all this stuff.
So he fucked up. He's fucked up from the get-go. But somehow it's Christina's fault and she is the bad guy. Oh.
Yes. But I also actually, I don't actually see him as villainizing her in this moment. What he's saying is fucked and it's a terrible time to say it. But actually, if he doesn't say it now, he will have this light bulb moment at some point and it's bad timing. He should have had this a little while ago.
I really think he did have it a little while ago. But
he hasn't let himself.
Hasn't said it out loud.
Admit it. Yeah, that's it. That's the thing.
And then Meredith gets this terrible job. And I don't know if she's struggling to walk in heels, but her walk down that aisle looks very uncomfortable. Oh, also, can I say, in the surgery that Burke was reading out his beautiful vows to everyone, I could not concentrate because next to Boki, there was this big plastic tub and there was what looked like a cocktail shaker just bobbing up and down in this big plastic cup. The whole time.
I wonder what it was.
I don't know, but I'd really like
maybe
to
it was
know.
Like something to do with the heart beating, keeping the heart beating.
It literally looked like a cocktail shaker half submerged in a tub of water. It was just bobbing. We were just having a really good time. And I got so distracted by
That's it. So funny. I can't believe we just talked about this in this pivotal moment where we're talking about the episode. It's like this is so.
Do you have ADHD? But Meredith gets up there.
Meredith has to go stand up in front of everyone.
Next to Derek.
Derek is the only person up there. And she says, you can all go home. It's over. It's so over.
And then just the image that's burned into my soul.
Into every single Grey's Anatomy person's soul. Unless you're about to talk about the cocktail shaker again.
It's a panning of Burke and Christina's apartment, and we start in the bedroom. The sheets are not made, which is just the bed's not made, and that is just not how Burke would do. And we come out of the bedroom and we pan to the living room and the silhouette of Christina in her gown, her stunning hair with diamantes. And the cinematography, it's so beautiful. The door unlatches and Meredith comes in. And Christina says he's gone. His trumpet was there. His records and CDs were here. His lucky scrub cap was on the door. And it's all gone.
And then she says the five words that are like these five words and pick me, choose me, love me. It's like one of the most seminal, iconic moments, lines in Grey's Anatomy history. She says, he's gone. I'm free. Damn it. And that, those words together, like the emotional journey shaken up in a cocktail shaker that of those words is incredible.
I want to know what Sandra Oh was thinking about in this moment to elicit this response. She had to have won an award just for this performance alone, tearing at her neck, trying to get that collar off.
Because suddenly, like, you know, you can see it. She can't breathe.
She can't breathe. And Meredith comes in with the scissors and tears off that gown. And she's standing there in a bustier and a slip as Meredith wraps her arms around her, just wailing for her freedom and her loss.
It is such an incredible scene.
The scene and Izzy when Denny passes away are just.
Yeah. Favorite moments of television.
Yeah. Some of the best moments of television.
Can't even say much more. No. I was crying. I don't let myself watch this bit sometimes. Sometimes when I'm rewatching Grace, I'm like, nope, not this time. And I just stop it before Burke talks to Christina. I was like, oh, I have to watch it. But I'm so glad I did because it's so fucking good.
They must have done that in one take. I just, how do you reset the hair and the makeup and the dress? It's just, it's just such an incredible.
It doesn't get that ruined.
No, but it's just.
I don't think she really cuts that dress.
It's such an incredible moment though. It's such a testament to the acting on the show, Sandra Oh, the writing, the direction. It's a phenomenal episode. For anyone who watched that for the first time, I hope you're okay.
How are you feeling?
It's been a few years since I rewatched Grey's. I felt like I was rewatching it for the first time.
So that's the end of season. Oh, no, it's not.
The new interns come into the locker room as George is emptying out his locker and Lexi wishes him a nice life and introduces herself as Lexi Gray.
And George does a little double take.
A little double take.
And Lexi is in the show and that's a nice way to end.
Lexi's.
After such a harrowing scene, we do get a little bright spark that is Lexi Gray. So that was season three. Thank you so much for being here with us. We are going to take a short break from doing these older episodes.
We're going to give you some time to recover and take in everything that was the first year of internship because we know our interns need it. We're going to be residents now.
Yeah, I think everyone needs a little break. We've been working hard, doing rounds. So much has happened in their first fucking year. I can't even believe it was 1 year. It's wild.
I can't wait to see your Tamsin's been talking about doing almost a diorama of the first year and trying to figure out a timeline of everything that happened.
A diorama. It's not going to be a diorama.
A timeline.
It's going to be a timeline. Dioramas like
with pictures, 3D. An infographic. Okay, yes. So we're going to take a couple of weeks.
We will give you a heads up when we're about to come back, but we will still be here for season 19. So, you know, listen to us on Tuesdays, even though these Thursday episodes will halt for a little moment. But we love you all. Thank you so much. And a special thank you to everyone who's joined our Patreon. It is so incredible to see you guys see that you want to support us. It means the world. And yeah, we'll talk to you on Tuesday. Come and hang out on @scarblesandtequila on Instagram because that is where we have all of our chats with you guys and we have a ball there. It's a great time.
Thank you all so much for listening and we will see you next time. Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye. Bye. Jenna. Yeah.